Audio Journal is a radio reading service intended for a print-impaired audience. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
Hey y'all, this is Anna, and along with Nick and Chris, we would like to welcome you to Audio Journal's sports page. This is a program by, for, and about sports, activities, adventure, and information involving people with a variety of disabilities. Okay, I found this interview, actually, I believe it's an interview, from Surfer Magazine. I thought it just caught my eye, so I hope you find it as interesting as well. All right, and it starts off with Still Gonna Send It, from Pro Snowboarder to Adaptive Surfing World Tour. After a tragic accident left him paralyzed, Chris Waker worked his way back into the water and onto the podium at the U.S. Open of Adaptive Surfing. Chris Waker was one of those guys I heard legends about before we finally met. A lot of my friend group from college had grown up with him in Vermont, and his name frequently popped up. As a professional snowboarder, he was a hammer on the mountain, whether it was in the park, pipe, or backcountry, and a great homie overall, regardless of the setting. By the time we finally met and became friends in 2021, Waker suffered a tragic accident while snowboarding that left him without movement or sensation throughout 80% of his body. As we met, he was learning to adapt to life as a quadriplegic, and surfing was something that was on his radar. After that time, I already had some experience with adaptive surfing thanks to Sean Brody, former parasurfing coach of Team USA, and volunteering at various clinics organized throughout San Diego and L.A. We made plans to surf without any specific timeline, just a shared understanding that future sessions were in order. From that very first meeting, Waker left an impression. Although he was going through one of the hardest things that could happen, he radiated optimism and positivity. His smile beamed as we talked about surfing, and he was genuinely excited to get in the water in due time. Thanks to the High Fives Foundation, Waker was reintroduced to surfing in Santa Cruz at one of their surf clinics that hosted over a dozen adaptive athletes. To put it simply, the hook was set and the stoke was real. Even with determination and support, the journey was no doubt terrifying. A wipeout could leave him face down and without air until someone could reach him. Each session was a massive learning experience in survival and adaptation. With time, his equipment got dialed in and the fear started to ease. Each session was no longer about survival. It was about shredding and progressing. Fast forward to today, and Waker has surfed and competed in both Hawaii and Australia, as well as near home in Oceanside for the U.S. Open for adaptive surfing. We have surfed together several times up and down the coast, and each time I'm blown away by how much he has progressed with reading waves and drawing lines. In recent years, Waker has also become a motivational speaker, and he lives by the expression that no matter what happened, he's still gonna send it. Surfing with him and the adaptive community has been a huge blessing, and together we share the story and hopes that it can help others get involved. Can you tell us about your early days and being a professional snowboarder? He said, I grew up in Vermont and went to Stratton Mountain High School. a winter sports academy where I basically dedicated my entire life to snowboarding. I started competing on the professional circuit at 17 and got to travel the world chasing snow and progression. I was able to obtain top 10 results on the World Cup circuit and do tour events, and even represented the U.S. at Snowboard World Championships in 2009. I've always loved board sports in every form, skateboarding as a kid, and then I fell in love with surfing in my late teens. Being in Vermont, surfing was a mission. We'd make 3-hour drives to Hampton Beach in New Hampshire, and sometimes Long Island or Jersey when we really wanted waves. Eventually, my competitive snowboarding career slowed down. I was riding half pipe and slope style, and when I didn't make the 2010 Olympic team, I shifted gears and became a coach. I moved to Colorado, started coaching with my former coach, Ian Kirk, and managed a squad of international athletes. In 2019, I was awarded the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Coach of the Year, which was surreal. I'd gone from athlete to mentor, and I loved it just as much. It was just as rewarding watching my athletes progress and obtain their goals. Next question. How did you become a quadriplegic? A year and a half later at Copper Mountain, I was excited at the terrain park behind one of my athletes. I was bombing back down to the lift when I unexpectedly caught my toe edge and dove straight into the ground. I instantly became a quadriplegic. No movement or sensation through about 80% of my body. It was the most terrifying moment of my life. I was flown to Denver for 2 neck surgeries and then transferred to Craig Hospital, where I spent 3 months learning how to exist. From the basics of just learning to regulate my bowels and bladder, to feeding myself, to learning how to push a wheelchair, etc., I basically had to relearn how to live again. When I was discharged, I moved to San Diego to be near the beach and to rebuild a new life around the people and environment that gave me energy. What was it like learning to surf again after your injury? His answer is, learning to surf after my injury was a trip. Most of the things I used to do without thinking suddenly felt terrifying. But the moment I got back in the ocean, I felt alive again, and I knew instantly that surfing was something I wanted to pursue. During my first handful of sessions, I caught a long right that carried me way down the beach. I fell off, landed face down, and couldn't flip over. I had to wait until the person who pushed me into the wave swam all the way back. Time slowed down, and I went into this dreamy, meditative state, which was both terrifying and surprisingly relaxing. It taught me quickly that I had to become more efficient in the water, not just for performance, but for survival. Surfing takes a lot of logistics for me. Getting into a wetsuit takes multiple people. I always need someone to push me into the waves, and having spotters on the inside helps me with confidence. Relying on others was never my strong suit, but having people show up, whether lifelong friends or someone I met at the coffee shop, has been one of the biggest gifts of my life. I've also been incredibly grateful for organizations like Waves for All and the High Fives Foundation for making access possible and helping fund adaptive sports equipment, which ain't cheap. Now you're competing again. How's it been to be in the mix with adaptive surfing events? Answer is, competition has been a fun chapter. I first got introduced to the adaptive surf world at the U.S. Open in Oceanside not long before I moved to San Diego. Over 110 adaptive athletes showed up from all over the world. Amputees, visually impaired, spinal cord injury, cerebral palsy, you name it. Watching people in a similar situation as myself and watching them rip. That was the biggest motivator. It is also one of the most supportive communities I have ever been a part of. It took me a few years to build the confidence to enter a contest. I remember telling myself, this is just for fun, no pressure. But once I put a jersey on, the competitor in me woke right back up and I wanted to win. He laughs. This past season, my second year on the ASP Adaptive World Tour, and after missing finals multiple times by fractions of a point, I finally made it to the podium at the U.S. Open Adaptive Surfing Championship in Oceanside, California. That progression meant a lot. But it's so much more than the results. Adaptive surfing took me to Australia this year, the biggest international trip I've made since my injury, and that alone felt like a victory. The community, the travel, the culture, the progression got me hooked. Next question. Did you know much about adaptive sports before you got involved? What can you share about the adaptive movement? Before my injury, I had almost no exposure to adaptive sports. I didn't know it existed at the level it does. I also didn't know how many people with disabilities growing up. Now that I'm a part of this community, I wish I'd been more aware and more involved earlier. If anyone gets the chance to watch or volunteer at an adaptive event, they'll understand instantly. The vibes are unrivaled. Everyone's frothing, cheering, pushing each other. Adaptive athletes are insanely creative. We modify equipment, technique, and strategy to suit bodies that don't follow the norm. It's progression in the purest form. Working on adaptive surfboards has been super fun, as I have been very knowledgeable about snowboard dimensions, side cuts, cambers, etc. And it's been fun to nerd out and learn more about the surf science. Last question, anything else you'd like to share? Answer, for anyone with a disability thinking about getting in the water, do it. It's scary. Sometimes it feels impossible, but once you catch a wave, you feel alive. I'm insanely grateful for my friends, old ones from childhood, and new ones from this community who helped me get back in the ocean. Whether it's piggybacking me downstairs, pushing me into the waves, or just being in the water and spotting, I wouldn't be able to do this or any of this without them. People assume being paralyzed means you stop sending it. For me, it just means sending it. It looks different now. The drive, the passion, the curiosity are still the same. I'm still gonna send it. That was so inspirational. I just love that story. All right, I found another article. Also has to do with the High Fives Foundation, which we were just discussing, and also bringing us back to Vermont and skiing, or being on the snow, I should say. And it is titled, Vermont resident Ryan McLaren named Roberts Athlete of the Year by High Fives Foundation. This is from Vermont Business Magazine. High Fives Foundation, a nonprofit national leader in outdoor safety education and adaptive sports support, has named Essex Junction, Vermont resident Ryan McLaren its 2025 M. Scott Roberts Athlete of the Year. The award was presented during the foundation's annual gala in Reno, Nevada, an evening dedicated to honoring the heart of the organization, the athletes, partners, volunteers, and supporters who drive the mission of preventing life-changing injuries and providing resources and hope when they occur. The event raised more than $545,000 to support athletes across the country. Presented by fellow Vermonter Chris Waker, here's his name, the M. Scott Roberts Award is one of the foundation's highest honors. it's not just a title, but a recognition of an individual's character. It is best bestowed upon an adaptive athlete who embodies the spirit of adventure, resilience, and community leadership defined by the legacy of the late M. Scott Roberts. Roberts was a passionate skier and a devoted friend of the High Fives Foundation, who deeply believed in the healing power of outdoor recreation. The distinction celebrates individuals who, like Scott, inspire others in adaptive sports to push boundaries and rediscover their potential. Ryan represents everything this award stands for, said Roy Tuscany, the founder and CEO of High Fives Foundation. His resilience, leadership, and commitment to showing up for others continue to inspire our athletes and our entire community. Ryan doesn't just adapt, he leads, and that spirit is exactly what M. Scott Roberts embodied, honoring a spirit of adventure. Earlier this year, High Fives Foundation released a short film spotlighting McLaren's recovery from a life-changing spinal cord injury sustained while skiing at Mad River Glen in Fayston, Vermont. McLaren was skiing the mountain for the very first time on St. Patrick's Day in 2017 when he landed on a rock. The fall left him paralyzed from the waist down. McLaren was selected for the award for his unwavering commitment to the reintegration into outdoor sports and his role as a leader within the adaptive athletic community. For High Fives, outdoor sports are a medium to unlock the freedom that lives inside all of us. Whether you've experienced a life-altering injury or not, McLaren said, that is freedom in mind and body, has built a community of growth, celebration, and stoke. A true Ohana, I'm proud to be a part of a group of athletes, volunteers, donors, and staff that show the world the power of possibility. The Scott Roberts Athlete of the Year Award is an incredible recognition and an inspiration to find new ways to serve our community. Ryan McLaren is a lifelong Vermonter who has been active in volunteer and public service before and after his injury. In addition to time spent in state government, McLaren has served as a longtime aide to the U.S. Senator Peter Welch, a high school lacrosse coach, and an elected justice of the peace in Essex Junction, where he resides with his spouse and two young children. McLaren is also a dedicated para-athlete, having completed the Boston Marathon 5 times as a hand cyclist. He will participate in the 2026 race this coming April. As the 2025 M. Scott Roberts Athlete of the Year recipient, McLaren joins a lineage of individuals who have turned life-changing injuries into a platform for inspiring others. About the High Fives Foundation. High Fives nonprofit foundation focuses on preventing life-changing injuries and provides resources and hopes if they happen. It was formed as a way to pay it forward by the founder, Roy Tuscany, after his own recovery from a spinal cord injury. The foundation has expanded to help over 1,011 athletes from 47 states and territories plus Canada since its inception in 2009. The High Fives Foundation is a California-based national 501c3 nonprofit, and it originates in Truckee, California. I know a little bit about this foundation because Roy Tuscany's wife is Alana Nichols, and she is an Olympic ski racer. She was at, oh my goodness, I think 3 Paralympic competitions. She suffered a terrible fall back when I believe she was 17 snowboarding, but she has done amazing things, and she now is part of the Women's Sports Foundation. So they're both powerhouses, so they do a lot for the community of all these athletes that are trying to do the best with what they have and excel. So, wow, it looks like I have used all my time here on Audio Journal Sports Page. I always want to remind you, if you guys hear of anything you'd like us to discuss or maybe get into a little bit more, please give us a ring at 508-797-1117. You can also always email us at info@audiojournal.org. And you know what? You can always mail at 799 West Boylston Street in Worcester, Massachusetts, 01606. And that's to Audio Journal. So, guys, it looks like I'm going to throw the ball to you guys. I can't wait to hear what you've got for us. Take it away.
Thank you, Anna. Hi, everyone. This is Nick, and I'll be reading you a few stories here for this week's edition of AJ Sports. The first article I would like to read is from agarprez.ro, and the article is called Alexandru Beloga Becomes Sportsman of the Year at First Paralympic Sports Gala in Romania. Judoka Alexandru Beloga, world champion in 2025 in judo for the visually impaired, was named Sportsman of the Year at the first edition of the Paralympic Sports Gala, organized by the National Paralympic Committee on Wednesday. Beloga said he was honored to receive the award at the inaugural Paralympic Sports Gala and that his motivation is always to finish first in competitions. Quote, "I feel very happy. It is an honor for me to win this award at the first Paralympic Sports Gala in Romania. This demonstrates that little by little, Paralympic sport is gaining more visibility. What always motivates me is my desire to be the best. I try to be the best and to give everything I have each time so that I can stand on the top step of the podium," end quote, Beloga said. He also expressed his appreciation for the support received from the International Judo Federation through its president, Marius Weiser. Quote, "Everyone is by my side, and Mr. Weiser supports me. I am pleased that there are high-quality individuals at international level who support Romanian athletes. This year, we have important objectives: the European Championship and the World Championship in August and September, and I prepare for them at every training session in order to win new medals," end quote, Beloga added. The title of Sportswoman of the Year 2025 was won by Gabriela Constantine in para table tennis. The non-Paralympic Sportswoman of the Year award went to Adriana Tofan, para climbing, and the non-Paralympic Sportsman of the Year to Cosmin Kindoy, paraclimbing, while skier Cassian Muntu received the Special Olympic Sportsman of the Year title. The Paralympic Hope Award was presented to Darius Dumitru, paraswimming, and the Lifetime Achievement and Excellence Award was conferred on Paula Christe. The 2025 Club of the Year was CSM Cluj-Napoca, where Coach of the Year Tomas Gurgley, who trains judoka Alexandru Beloga, is active. The Team of the Year in Romanian Paralympic Sport Award was won by the National Football Team for the visually impaired. Alongside Federation Presidents, athletes and Paralympic athletes, the first edition of Romania's Paralympic Sports Gala was also attended by the president of the International Paralympic Committee, Andrew Parsons, the president of the International Blind Sports Federation, IBSA, Ilgar Ramov, and the president of the Hungarian Paralympic Committee, Laszlo Spabo, and IBSA Executive Director Rufat Hajili. The next article I would like to read from somersetlive.co.uk is entitled Visually Impaired Skier Set to Race at Winter Paralympic Games. The 18-year-old Bath skier will race in the visually impaired class para-alpine events. Bath skier Hester Pohl has been selected to represent Paralympics GB at the Milano Cortina 2026 Winter Paralympic Games. The 18-year-old will race in the visually impaired class para-alpine events, partnered by guide Ali Hall, with whom she has skied since 2023. Hester is a familiar face around the Team Bath Sports Training Village, STV, where she has trained and enjoyed sport for almost a decade. She progressed from Team Bath Tribe activities onto the Team Bath Futures Athlete Development Program, where she received bespoke strength and conditioning training as her skiing career, which she started aged 7, flourished. She then briefly moved on to the Talented Athlete Scholarship Scheme, TASS, before joining the lottery-funded GB Snow Sport Team Performance Program, continuing to do some of her off-slope training at the STV with the UK Sports Institute, UKSI. Jess Clements, Sports Development Manager, said, quote, "We would like to send a huge congratulations to Hester from all of us at Team Bath. It has always been her dream to compete at a Paralympic Games, and we can't wait to see Hester fulfill that ambition at Milano Cortina. We've continued to follow Hester's career since she progressed from Team Bath Futures and are so proud of what she has achieved. She is an inspiration to all at the STV and a fantastic example to those aspiring athletes currently on the Futures program of what can be achieved through dedication and commitment." End quote. King Edward School, KES, Bath is immensely proud to celebrate the selection of former pupil for the Milano Cortina 2026 Winter Paralympic Games, where she will compete for Paralympics GB in the visually impaired para-alpine events. Hester, 18, who left KES last summer, will take to the slopes in Italy in March, racing slalom and giant slalom alongside her guide, Ali Hall, marking her debut appearance on the world's biggest para sports stage. Her selection was confirmed this week, with Paralympics GB announcing that Hester will join teenage athletes Dom Allen and Sam Cozens as part of an exciting next generation of British para skiers. Hester first began skiing on the dry slope at Mendip at just 6 years old, progressing rapidly through grassroots racing and making her international debut at 12, originally guided by her brother, Benji, who also attended KES. She earned her place on the national pathway through GB Snow Sport, where she rose through the ranks of the Para-Alpine Development Squad to the World Cup circuit. Alongside her sporting success, Hester has also excelled academically. Following her straight-A grades at A level, she has recently accepted a place at the University of Cambridge to study English, reflecting her impressive all-around talent and commitment. Speaking following the announcement, Hester said, quote, "I am thrilled to announce that I have been selected to represent Great Britain in the Milano Cortina 2026 Paralympic Winter Games. I want to thank KES for playing such a huge role in my journey. Making sacrifices is an inevitable part of reaching the pinnacle of sport. But KES made certain that I would never have to compromise on my education. So it is a massive thank you to all of my teachers who received, had to read, scribbled, half-finished essay plans in place of the essays they had asked for, who showed unwavering belief in me, even when I couldn't, who pushed me to achieve academically, in the classroom, on the slopes, and occasionally in the gondola. It may be true that it takes a village to raise a child. It certainly takes a school to send a student to the Paralympic Games. Headmaster Martin Bowden offered warm congratulations, saying, quote, "We are absolutely thrilled for Hester, whose amazing achievements embody the very best of King Edward's School. Her determination and talent in her sport have always been evident, and her commitment to excellence both in and out of the classroom has always been inspiring. To see her now representing her country on the Paralympic stage alongside her remarkable academic success is a truly extraordinary accomplishment. The entire KES community is immensely proud of her, and we will be cheering her on every step of the way in Cortina." And that's the end of that article. The next article I would like to read is from Havasu News.com. It's entitled, "Teacher Raises $20,000 to Turn an Old Thunderbolt Wrestling Room into Student Training Space." Naomi Severson has been teaching physical education for over 13 years, all in rural school districts. She arrived at Thunderbolt Middle School, and one of the first things that stuck out to her was a large, empty room that was once the high school wrestling room and had since been deemed a multi-purpose room for occasional meetings. Almost immediately, Severson had a vision to transform the vacant space into a training room to give every student a safe, adaptable, and inclusive space to learn about resistance training and gain a sense of self-confidence. After 5 years have passed and $20,000 has been raised from community businesses, Severson's vision is now fully realized. The renovated training room is now stocked with multiple benches, rowing machines, various weights and plates, resistance bands, pull-up bars, pilo boxes, and gymnastic rings and straps. The middle school has had a smaller weight room with antiquated equipment, but this refurbished room with modern and safe machines and tools will support full classes. Thunderbolt can now provide resistance training classes to athletes of many different fitness levels to promote muscle growth and neuroplasticity, while also preparing students for the jump in fitness before transitioning to high school sports. Severson says this project would not have been completed nearly as quickly without the help of local businesses who were eager to assist. Once the district gave her the green light to pursue this project, she moved quickly to raise the money needed. She says Anderson Toyota is one company that has been ready to help since the idea first sprouted in her head 5 years ago. They were willing to write a $10,000 check to replace the room's flooring then. The project was approved near the beginning of the school year, and she didn't start fundraising officially until September. By October, Severson had already raised the necessary money to order the new equipment and flooring. She credits Adam Pax from Lux Locker for donating and spreading the word to the community and other businesses about the project. Anderson Toyota and Lux Locker, along with Summerlin Financial, Air Control Home Services, and Janisek Homes, all pitched in to make the renovations possible. Quote, I can't give enough credit to our sponsors because, really and truly, I think we could have gotten the district to fund this, but it would have taken much longer, and just to have businesses that are willing to step up. I cannot say enough about those companies, about just how much it means to have their support, Severson said, end quote. The equipment finished arriving by December, and she, her husband, and Thunderbolt's custodian, David Griffin, got to work to install it fully. Severson says despite the time and ambition it took to bring her vision to fruition, she never once felt discouraged. Quote, there's not a lot that scares me, to be honest, end quote, Severson said. Quote, and anybody who knows me knows, Severson just keeps asking. I'm just keep going and keep knocking on doors until somebody says yes. I always tell my students, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So I was just going to keep taking shots, end quote. The biggest thing that Severson hopes students gain from the training room is the confidence and understanding that they are fully competent to use the equipment. Quote, we are not trying to create the heaviest lifters in this town or the school, end quote, Severson said. Quote, but this definitely changes how the students see themselves and how capable they believe they are. They come in here thinking, no way, I can't do this. And they leave going, I can do this. They feel accomplished and confident. Almost every person at some point in their life will join a gym. So teaching them gym etiquette and how to conduct themselves is huge, end quote. She says the student response has already been notable, and she has seen students come in to use the equipment and feel the satisfaction of improving physically and mentally. She believes that gyms in town that offer summer programs will see a large uptick in numbers because of how students will gain motivation to work out as a result of the school facility. Another aspect of the training room that makes it stand out is its adaptability. The type of programming in the room can be modified to support the needs of high-level athletes, casual gym-goers, and students with disabilities. Quote, there's always something in this space that any ability of athlete can do, end quote, Severson said. Quote, so this definitely makes the program, I would say, more inclusive, end quote. In addition to the self-confidence the room aims to install in students, Severson says science proves that a space like this will help students' development in multiple ways. It will help them physically by increasing muscular skeletal strength and bone density, which helps prevent injuries, but it will help students mentally as well. Severson says resistance training boosts the brain's neuroplasticity, the ability to change and adapt to new information, improving learning and memory. Now that the project is done and all of the equipment is ready to serve the community, Severson can hardly describe the fulfillment and gratitude she feels after 5 years of patience and perseverance. Quote, it's wildly fulfilling. I can't really explain it, end quote, Severson said. Quote, I'll get emotional if I try because I think this matters for our kids. I think this matters for our students. I think to know that this project mattered to our community enough to pour $20,000 into this is so humbling. It's pretty surreal, end quote. And that's the end of my reading for this week's edition of AJ Sports. I'll hand it off to Chris to finish it off. Take it away, Chris.
Hello, listeners. It's Chris here coming to you, and I'm bringing a few more articles to round out our time together. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. Meet Tatiana McFadden, Team USA's most decorated paratrack and field Paralympian. From walking on her hands in a Russian orphanage to becoming the most decorated American track and field Paralympian, Tatiana McFadden has left a trail of greatness at every turn. Tatiana McFadden's story began in Leningrad, now St. Petersburg, Russia, in 1989, when spina bifida left her paralyzed from the waist down at birth. Alone in an orphanage without access to a wheelchair, Tatiana moved through her life on her hands until she was the age of 6. Doctors warned she wouldn't survive. Now, at age 35, her 7th Paralympics behind her, McFadden has become the most decorated U.S. para track and field Paralympian of all time. But that's not all. She has transformed the landscape of sports for athletes with disabilities, broken records, changed laws, and inspired millions along the way. McFadden shares her story in an exclusive interview with Olympics.com. Born in post-Soviet Leningrad, McFadden embraced a positive mindset. "I didn't know what disability meant when I was young," she told Paralympics.com. "I just wanted to play like all the other kids. I never saw myself as different." In 1994, her life changed when Deborah McFadden, a U.S. Department of Health and Human Services commissioner, adopted her and brought her to the United States at the age of 6. There, Tatiana received her first wheelchair, a red one with symbolized freedom. "I got in it, and I was pushing up and down the street so fast, doing wheelies," she recalled in an interview with NBC Sports. Once in Baltimore, McFadden immersed herself in sports, trying everything her local sports program had to offer. "But it was a racing chair that she found her true calling. The moment I sat in that chair, I knew it was for me," she said. "It was freedom like I had never felt before." And just like that, her dream to become a Paralympian was born. McFadden's Paralympic debut came only 9 years after arriving in the U.S. In Athens, 2004, the 15-year-old McFadden won silver in the T54 100-meter, bronze in the 200-meter. But that wasn't all the teenager was accomplishing that year, as there was still a battle to be fought at home. "No one thought I would make the team. No one thought I would medal. When I came back to the games, people didn't really know that the Paralympics had happened. I wanted to join the high school track team, but I didn't have the right to run alongside the other runners. I didn't understand why I was being discriminated against." So, McFadden filed a lawsuit against her high school in Maryland, ultimately leading to the passing of the Fitness and Athletic Equity for Students with Disabilities Act, known informally as Tatiana's Law, which requires schools to provide equal opportunities for disabled athletes to participate in interscholastic sports. I want to talk more about the lawsuit. Being 15 years old, going through all this and throughout high school, and it really like matured me beyond my years, McFadden told Olympics.com. "It wasn't an easy fight, but it had such a huge impact. The young athletes competing now, many of them were just in high school a year or two ago, and they were able to participate because of that law. I still get messages today from people telling me that they can compete because of what I fought for." Some of these young athletes even competed alongside her at the Paralympics in Paris. Tatiana McFadden, a Paralympic powerhouse. McFadden's success in Athens was only the beginning. She went on to win her first 3 Paralympic titles in London 2012 and an incredible 6 medals, including 4 golds at Rio 2016. In addition to her 21 Paralympic medals, the American was 24 world major marathon wins, including 4 consecutive Grand Slams, and has broken 5 world records in across para track and field. McFadden's range is astounding, competing in events ranging all from 100 to the marathon. Her success even transcends seasons, as she competed in the Sochi 2014 Winter Paralympic Games, winning silver in the 1-kilometer ski sprint. A special moment for McFadden, who competed in Russia, the country of her birth, in front of both her adoptive mother and her birth mother. "I cried when she crossed the finish line. I think back to this little girl in an orphanage. She came back to the place where she was, and where she wanted to invite the people who had saved her life," she said about her Winter Paralympic silver. But her journey to the podium wasn't always smooth. After a battle with blood clots in 2017, she faced a long and grueling recovery that extended well into Tokyo 2020. It was really tough, McFadden admitted. "The blood clots set me back mentally and physically. It took 18 months to recover. Even when I was training and racing, I just wasn't at my best." She found support in other elite athletes who had faced similar health challenges. Olympian Katie Hoff, who has struggled with blood clots, became an important confidant. It helped to talk to somebody who understood, McFadden said. There's just not enough support or education out there for patients with blood clots. Anyone can get them. But McFadden made a remarkable comeback, and at the Paris 2024 Paralympic Games, she added two more medals to her collection, silver in the 100 meter and a bronze in the mixed relay, officially becoming the most decorated track and field Paralympian in the United States. There was a lot of new risks going into these Paralympic Games, McFadden explained. I worked with a new coach and completely changed my training. But what I learned was that success wasn't always looking at the medals. It's about how you compete, and I felt competitive again. She reflected on breaking the record. I'm really proud to walk away with being the most decorated in the U.S., with 22 total Paralympic medals, 21 summer track medals, which is pretty amazing, McFadden said. Now that, as McFadden put it, she was done it all, won all the medals, she turns to give back to her community. She started by donating the money from her silver and bronze to Move United, a non-profit organization dedicated to promoting parasport. After these Paralympics in Paris, I decided to go back again and give the earnings and winnings of my two medals to Move United. I recently became an ambassador, and I wanted to be a four-year commitment all the way to LA because I don't know whose life I'll be changing. Maybe the next Paralympian will be formed. The next challenge? LA 2028 and beyond. With the Paris Games behind her, McFadden now turns her focus to an even more personal stage, the Los Angeles 2028 Paralympic Games, where she aims to break new records on home soil. I have unfinished business, she said. It's not just about the medals. Though, yes, I'm aiming to break the global record. McFadden needs only one more medal to become the most decorated track and field Paralympian of all time. But it's also about what we, as Americans, can do for the people with disabilities in our communities as we host the LA 28 Games in our own country. She challenges her host nation to go above and beyond what Paris did in terms of visibility and exposure. We had 15.4 million views this year at the Paralympic Games, so that's huge and really exciting, McFadden said. She credits the rise in social media storytelling as a critical factor in boosting the stories of Paralympic athletes. I think the power is storytelling, she explained. People hear my story, and they tell their friends. The next thing you know, more people are watching, more people are paying attention. She also called on the U.S. to follow Europe's lead in embracing Paralympic sports. When I was in Paris, even my prelim races were sold out. I've never experienced that before, she says. I challenge LA to do the same and go even further. Although she is nowhere near done, McFadden contemplated the legacy she hopes to leave behind. I want my legacy to be about equality and equity, she said. Not just for Paralympics and wheelchair racing, but for the people with disabilities in everyday life. Looking back, looking forward. As McFadden reflects on her journey from the orphanage in Leningrad to the Paralympic podiums around the world, her thoughts turn to the little girl she once was. If she could go back in time, what would she say to her younger self? I would say, thank you for being so brave, McFadden answered. The attitude that I had in that orphanage was so different than a typical childhood in an orphanage with a disability. I didn't see myself as different back then. I just wanted to be involved, and that mindset shaped everything. All right, next up, a soccer team in wheelchairs? New Jersey's Power, Red Bulls, play for keeps. Michael Fandicaro can't talk and drive at the same time. He needs help to get out of bed, to take care of basic hygiene, and to feed himself. In fact, Fandicaro says he's fully dependent on others when he's not in his power wheelchair. But put that chair on the basketball court, and you'd better get out of Fandicaro's way. The 27-year-old from Fairlawn co-founded the Power Red Bulls, a soccer team run for and by people who use motorized wheelchairs. At a recent practice, Funda Kakaro sped across the court at a Farallon Community Center, cutting off passes and spinning to knock a heavy, oversized turquoise ball towards his teammates. The fact that I can play fully independently with people who understand the game is why I enjoy it so much, said Funda Kakaro, who has a congenital enzyme deficiency and uses an assistive tablet-like device to speak. That's why he can't talk and drive in his chair simultaneously. Both use the same switches, which he adjusts by using his hands. Added Funkakaro, with us running everything, it shows the world able-bodied people don't have to look at us and just look out for us. What is power soccer, you might ask? Power soccer is a 4-on-4 game for people who use power wheelchairs for daily mobility, with 3 field players and a goalkeeper. It is played with a 13-inch ball, almost double the diameter of a traditional soccer ball, on a regulation basketball court. It is the only competitive team sport available in most motorized wheelchair users, though the players are more severely impaired physically. According to Power Red Bull's co-founder Meredith Bradford, they are able to communicate and work together like any other team sport. Born in the 1970s in France as Power Chair Football, Power Soccer has grown to more than 250 competitive teams in 27 countries. The U.S. Power Soccer Association was founded in October of 2006. It sponsored 4 conferences with 41 teams last season, as well as a dozen more competitive but unaffiliated teams and recreational squads like the Power Red Bulls. You don't have to be an expert at soccer to be on the team, said Matt Gould, a 24-year-old from Clifton who had been playing since 2008. That's why I loved his team so much, because we're accepting of everybody's skills and abilities. Nobody is better than the other. We don't see the chairs as regular people do, he added. We treat each other like equals. Most power soccer players can get started using their own wheelchair, driven using a variety of methods, like a joystick or Funda Kakaro's head array, plus an added foot guard to manipulate the ball. As Red Bulls practice, volunteers helped zip-tie plastic guards donated by the USPSA around the base of most chairs. Abdul Asadi, a 24-year-old with cerebral palsy, brings his guard home and ordered his own ball online. He practices in parking lots and in the backyard, even inside the kitchen of his Clifton home, according to his sister Eve, who kicks him the ball so he can block it back. His favorite thing to do is winning, Eve Asadi said. That's why he loves practice and then why he practices a lot, because he's always aiming at winning. Funda Kakaro and Bradford, a 31-year-old from Lincroft, who has cerebral palsy, grew up playing on a Morris County-based power soccer team. Coach Jerry Harris recalled practice shuttling to a different high school and other gyms around the area. A Morris Township dad of 3, Harris saw a Daily Record article about the team around the same time his 3 children were aging out of youth teams that he could lead. When Funda Kakaro and Bradford decided to launch the Power Red Bulls 2 years ago, they reached out to Harris again. The team debuted in March of 2023 with a USPSA clinic with national team player Peyton Sefik from upstate New York. More than 15 wheelchair users attended the first session in Farallon. The Power Red Bulls, who are affiliated with a Major League Soccer team's academy, practice once a month, but have not yet played a competitive game. Each team must have 6 sanctioned games to be part of the USPSA conference, which is Bradford's goal. I want my winner, my loser, and a referee. I want it to matter, to be a real game, said Bradford, who managed the University of Illinois wheelchair basketball team. We have super big dreams. I think we can do it together. We have a pretty good shot. All right, now let's get outside and talk a little baseball. How baseball coach Don Landafalli came to help visually impaired athletes. Luck? Perhaps fate? Maybe. More like divine intervention, at least for Don Landafalli. I was watching a baseball team practice back in 06 or 07 while I was in Italy, coaching a top Italian team. The Hall of Fame former baseball coach at Brooklyn College told the Brooklyn Eagle last week. I realized, he continued, the gentleman instructing the team was a former player of mine, Valerio Ranieri, who was coaching a visually impaired team. And so, the seed was planted for Don Landafalli, a man who had been involved with baseball for close to 60 years as a player and a coach, both nationally and internationally. Just watching those youngsters play and perform, he said, I learned so much from it. Blind people can do so many things. They can play baseball, of course with limitations, but they can still play. The bug that hit Landafalli while in Italy about 11 years ago, he says, I was helping the Italian visually impaired ball club, he remembers, and before I knew it, one of the organizers, Lorenzo, asked me if he could start a program like this in America. Fast forward to Central Park, circa 2015. Some people did come from Italy to help, said Landafalli, who grew up in Avenue U and West 7th Street, right above the Sea Beach subway line. We had our first clinic, he said, and attracted some people. With the help of the Lions Club, Landafalli was able to fund the program, purchase equipment, and become competitive. How competitive? The blind baseball tournament was staged at the Netherlands 2 years ago. Italy won it. The Holland trip in the WBSC Blind International Cup was sponsored by the Lions Inc., according to Landafalli, who was the first time the World Baseball Conference sanctioned this tournament, he said. Coach Landafalli's unit placed third with a bronze medal. Now, the 83-year-old coach is taking his co-ed crew to England for a second international tournament. We may not be as strong as we were 2 years ago, says Landafalli, speaking like a true coach. One of our players can't go. He does not have his citizenship, and another never applied for it. Landafalli's squad plays on Friday against a team from Hungary in the first round. Pakistan and Great Britain are also on the same bracket. Cuba, Holland, Italy, Japan, and China are on the opposite bracket, according to the coach. You've been listening to Audio Journal Sports Page, our effort to look at sports from a different point of view. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. This is Chris, along with Anna and Nick. If you have any information on any disabled sports and would like us to share it with our listeners, give us a call at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal. Our poem today is The End by A.A. Milne. When I was one, I had just begun. When I was two, I was nearly new. When I was three, I was hardly me. When I was four, I was not much more. When I was five, I was just alive. But now I am six. I'm as clever as clever. So I think I'll be six now, forever and ever. You've been listening to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal and read by me, Nikki Whichello. Thanks for listening. May your life be filled with poetic wonder.